This is the Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
Good news in shoes.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA, and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Martech program, Joe Martech.
Turn it off when
we're on the air.
Joe, you're on.
I know, we're on the air. But I'm trying to catch Pastor Dave over here, because Pastor Dave last week forgot to turn us off.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and, Alan was in the background waving his arms up in the air, jumping up and down, getting all excited, but he wouldn't say a word because he knew we were still on the air. And we couldn't figure out if you were having a heart attack or what was happening.
Certainly good thing he didn't say anything untoward, Joe.
Well, that would not be allowed. But, however, some great news. Usually, when the Fed raises interest rates like they did today, a quarter of a point, the stock market gets a little wishy-washy. Today. The Dow Jones average
today
up over 120 points.
It was baked in.
It was baked in, but you know, we still got the Trump bump going on, and that might last for a good while. But that's not why we are here today. We are not supposed to talk politics or any of that stuff. But Pastor Tom got his whip out and said,
"Well, that wasn't political. That was informational on
informational
on the stock market."
I am Joe Martech.
Are you?
And this is the Team Martech Hour. And included in the team are Pastor Dave, Pastor Tom, who's hiding in the other room right now. Is he sneaking out on us, Dave?
Can't blame him.
He's in the background making sure everything happens.
Scary. Given just like give God. Or take in 2004, Joe Martech, financial advisor, Greg Fasula, attorney, Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, started doing radio shows with the very simple concept of trying to teach people and inform our local residents about some of the things in life that we take for granted as professionals. When you spend a lot of time learning what we have learned and then spend another 20 or 30 or 40 years, depending on who I'm talking to, fine-tuning and continuing to learn, like how many hours a year, Vince, would you guess you have to put in for continuing education?
I don't have to guess. I know.
How many?
40 hours a year.
A year. See, I have no clue because I take courses constantly. Whenever they tell me, take them, because I've got to take... Because I've got a Series 24, I have to take some. For Series 7, I have to take some. And for State, I have to take some. So I don't really pay much attention because the compliance people, they keep telling you, you got to take this or we're going to fine you. And then we're going to get you for even more money if you don't take it.
So some people take it more seriously than others, Joe. I mean, they take the CPE courses. Some of them are geared to, let's put it this way, you can get through them pretty easily.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there are other courses that you can't get them through that easily. They really test you.
Once every, I forget what it is, 2 or 3 or 1 or 5 years, and I forget what, I have to physically go sit for 3 hours. And it's not a course. You have to sit and listen. And then every once in a while, like every 5 or 10 minutes, they come up and they ask you a question to make sure you're not asleep, that you attended. You know what I'm trying to say? This is part of, and Alan, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's a compliance situation, I believe.
Yeah.
And you know, the other interesting thing, Joe, is we have to take ethics courses once every 3 years. And since I'm licensed in 2 states, I've got to take 2 ethics courses. So that means I'm the most ethically trained CPA out there, I think. Unless you have multiple other licenses in other states.
You might have.
Yeah,
Well, I'm licensed in 13 states, choice.
Do each one of them require an ethics course for you?
No. None of them require anything except money. Does this sound like America or any country when you think about it?
Well, it is capitalistic.
Well, you know what happens is, it's if I have a client, I had one just move from Florida to Kentucky. Mm. I was never licensed in Kentucky. Well, my compliance people say, huh, you have a client in Kentucky now.
All right.
You know, if you ever want to make any money off of that client, you need to get licensed.
And let me guess, it cost you $110 to get licensed.
It was actually $50.
Whoa, that was a bargain.
Some states, like I think New York's $180
or something. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
But different states charge different amounts. But, you know, it's and it's called, I said, wait a minute, I've never even been to Kentucky. They said, tough. And I'm paraphrasing. Obviously, they don't say it that way, but they give you like 18 paragraphs of tough. You know, rather than just telling you you have to do it if you want to stay, that's all there is to it. Anyway, that is not why we're here. So the concept of Team MarTech when we first started was to educate people, to help people, to answer questions. And there's no such thing as bad questions. And I mean that honestly, folks. If you have a question I don't want to hear, or I don't care if you want to tell me that you think that you feel bad about asking it. But I had a lady come in to see me that was very intelligent, not too long ago, not a young woman, not old, but she was in her 30s. And she said, what is stock?
Wow.
And I said, well, you make soup with it. She goes,
you had to go to your financial planner to get that answer.
Or they make soup with it. Or they used to lock people in them in punishment.
Yeah,
right.
That's true. That was a stockade. Well, no, that was a stock.
That was a stock.
Right. It was a stock.
Or it was a place for prisoners, stockade.
Aid, yeah.
You know, now, where the aid came in, we don't know. Or there's also called livestock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, English is a terrible language. Where we have so many words that mean the same thing.
Yeah.
Right? It's just not fair. These poor
stock
people
can mean inventory too, Joe.
Stock can be inventory. Yeah, keep
you
going.
You know, I've noticed something. When you were talking about licensing fees, you were talking about numbers. You've gotten away from numbers. So I'd like to give 10 numbers. If you'd like to participate in the show today, please call us at 888-221-8990.
And what do you call that, Alan?
That's a phone number alert, a PNA.
And if you're calling from a cell phone, you can skip the one.
That's right.
But if you're calling from a real phone, house wired phone, you have to put the one in front of the 888, even though it's toll free. You know, I saw this cartoon where there's two little kids talking to each other. They're like 8 or 10 or 12 years old, and they're looking around for their phone. He goes, you know, somebody ought to invent a phone that is attached to a wall with a wire.
That is good. I like that.
Sign of the times, guys. So Joe MarTech, financial advisor, Greg Fasula, attorney, Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, started doing these courses, these classes, this radio shows. And we, over a period of time, added Vince Rizzino, CPA. I interviewed CPAs for I don't know how long, and I just by pure accident I bumped into Vince 5 or 6 years ago, whenever it was. And from
we were watching a football game.
Yeah, which is not a bad thing, even though you were cheering for the wrong team.
No. Well, I guess you could say that after 50 years, my team hasn't won much.
Yeah, you know. So what can I tell you? Then we also, during a process, added Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart. And it's part of this adding these different professionals, even though a lot of these people have been in business 20 and 30 and 40 years, certain things happened that created more questions. When the recession hit, the debacle in real estate, with all of a sudden the value of real estate soaring up and then soaring down, which then created the last slot, which was Mike Polis, mortgage broker, because when you listen to the media, you know, you wonder why Trump gets upset with the media. I mean, I remember when the media said there's no mortgage money available, nobody can get finance, and that was never true. There was always mortgage plans. VA programs were always there. This USDA program, which is 100% financing, was always there. The difference that happened during the course of the real estate bubble and debacle was there was a point that you really didn't have to qualify for the mortgage, or they allowed you to put down information and almost convinced you to falsify. It's kind of, I'm trying to find a word to say lie without saying lying, but that's just what it really was. And they didn't verify
alternative
anything.
Truth.
Alternative truth. So you go, are you a Democrat? Never mind. Anyway, I know. Anyway, so the whole concept was a mortgage person came in, and now Mike educates people and lets them know what goes. And normally we get, if Mike's on, we get quite a few calls, because the difference between Mike Polis And walking into the bank is pretty dramatic. If you walk into your local bank and say, I want to get a mortgage, you fill out an application, and you may want a deposit, and 2 or 3 weeks later, they tell you yes, no, or maybe. Mike will tell you in 15 minutes, and it doesn't cost you anything. And he'll also let you know what you qualify for. So the concept that we did with the group was try to put together local professionals with experience, with credibility, big word, with integrity.
Even bigger.
And with ability to do the right thing for people. And we've been very blessed to help a lot of people, and a lot of people have helped us. And a lot of good things have come from both of the radio shows that we do. And by the way, those of you that really enjoy this show, you can listen to WPSL, which is 1590 AM every Wednesday at 11. That's talk radio. I'm on just before Rush Limbaugh for no good reason, but that's what it is. So the object of the shows, again, is to teach, inform, help any way we can. So, and we have a guest star who's going to Las Vegas. Is that what you said?
Yes, I'm going to be with a friend who's ill, and I'm going to hopefully have a wonderful week out there. And it's going to be hopefully a very good, fun time. And the important thing is, I think Las Vegas is a very interesting city, because if you're not into gambling, you can live in Las Vegas just like you can live in Port St. Lucie. There is such a microcosm of people. There is such a microcosm of activities. You can basically stay around your home and not do much and not even know that Las Vegas Strip exists.
Yep. Once you get off the Strip, it's like any other time.
On the other hand, you can see some of the world's top-notch entertainment and have some of the world's top-notch chefs feeding you. It's your choice, but in this case, it's basically going to be with friends and people that I care about.
And if you have a wife and you take her with you, you're in trouble, because they have some of the best shopping in the whole world. Ask any woman, the best stores, and none of them are, these are not cheap stores, but boy, what a mall. I mean, you name it, they've
got.
Go
to the mall at the Forum. Have you ever been in there?
Well, the whole thing, it goes forever, you know, and it's an interesting concept.
New York, New York.
Yeah, I had a client of mine who died some years ago. And he said, Joe, if you had a person from out of the United States that you wanted to take to the most impressive city in America, where would you take them? Now, he was a question. Obviously, he wanted me to say Las Vegas, and I didn't. He said, think about it. And what Alan was saying, you name it, it's got it, as far as every entertainment, best food in the world, best entertainment. And the food's not expensive unless you want to spend a lot, because you can get some really, really good restaurants, good food.
The casinos. If you frequent a casino and play a reasonable amount, now I'm not talking hundreds or thousands of dollars, but a reasonable amount, the pit boss will come up to you and say, have you had dinner yet?
Yeah.
Then you say no, and you and your guest
will have
dinner.
Yeah.
What they're trying to do is they're trying to keep you in the casino,
get
have a nice dinner, and then come back to the tables and hopefully win money. But most people, of course, don't.
Casinos don't stay in business by losing more than they win. You know, so we all know this. That's just
the odds are rigged against you anyway.
Huh?
The odds are against you when you walk in the place. Every game in the casino is for the house.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
In the long run. Some less so, some more so.
1-888-221. That's why they call it games of chance.
There's a chance you might win.
Just a chance you might win. 1-888-221-8990. So we're here to answer questions. Vince Rizzino, CPA, is here. Joe Martek, financial advisor. Guest star, Mr. Alan Love, attorney, retired attorney, I guess you're still a financial advisor. You keep your licenses current.
That's correct.
So he and I don't agree on everything, but we agree on most things.
But I'm glad he's here, though, Joe, because he keeps, you know, kind of the counterweight to you.
Well, he remembers
a check on you.
He remembers the phone number, too, which is pretty good.
Well, he does those
888-221-8990.
He practices this before he gets here.
You know, we're here to answer questions, so I've got one for you, Vince.
Oh, man. All right, Alan.
I will admit that thanks to helpful bank. I was not scammed on a computer scam that was telling me that my computer had been infected. But I'm just wondering, Vince, if somebody that owns a business gets scammed to where they've got to get a new computer system or spend a lot of money to get the infection out and reconstruct the records, how does that affect their taxes? Would that be treated like theft or a business loss, something like that?
Well, yes. Well, put it this way. It depends on from what angle you're looking at. From a tax return or a deduction point of view?
Yeah.
yes, the loss, there's a loss that could be calculated, an opportunity or business loss that could be calculated on that. That's why they have these days, they have insurance to cover these things.
Yeah.
In fact, we had to buy a policy such as that to keep our rates down,
yeah,
because there's, especially accounting firms, we hold on to a lot of personal information about clients, their social security numbers, dates of birth. Now, a certain state that up north called New York actually requires us to capture driver's license information from our clients. So, because we need to insert that information on a tax return, they will not accept an e-file return without driver license. Imagine the security risk they just did. They just enhanced the security risk across the United States.
Well, in a securities business, which I'm a stockbroker, securities rep, we have to have a copy of a driver's license or an official ID. Let's say people don't drive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So a military ID would work, or a ID that looks like a driver's license, but it's not a driver's license, that somebody that doesn't drive anymore might have. And I have to have that for every new piece of business that opens up.
Mm-hmm.
And like I don't know that it makes any difference if a crook's a crook or somebody's going to do what they're going to do. I don't know that that makes much difference, but that's the rule.
Yeah, and you need a driver's license to file a tax return, but not to vote in some states.
Well, in Florida, you need a picture ID to vote. You don't need a voter's card, you need a picture ID.
In some states,
the computer system is
pretty
good.
You're okay.
Yeah, pretty good. But I think I don't understand why people complain about that. You know, that, hey, we want everybody to vote whether they're registered or not, whether they're a citizen or not, or whatever. And I what's wrong with this picture ID and registering to vote? Have you figured out what's wrong with that?
Picture ID is fine.
I don't
as
understand.
As long as it's legit.
Yeah, I think it's perfectly normal. Anyway, so we're here to answer questions. Joe Martek, financial advisor. Vince Rizzino, CPA. Alan Love, attorney. Pastor Dave for who knows what. Pastor Tom in the other room for less than who knows what. You know, we don't know exactly.
And by the way, thank you, Alan, for that question. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that are curious.
Well, if I can just follow up briefly. Let's say that a system gets hacked and personal information is out there. Would most insurance policies cover that so the firm wouldn't have civil liability?
You have to buy special insurance.
I see.
You
have special insurance
and,
for that.
That it's becoming a big, big problem.
Yeah.
So,
and I would assume very expensive.
No, at this point, no, but it's getting there. I imagine that's going to get worse.
The amount of hacking that goes on, I imagine. Hey,
there's an ancillary to that I want to get out. There's also, I thought you were going to ask me the question about identity theft, because that is huge right now for our industry. And I had a client just 2 days ago wrote me and said, my daughter received this notice from her employer and I don't know what to do with it. And it was basically the employer was hacked and their employee's data was hacked.
Wow.
Their social security number. And so they alerted every employee that this has happened. Because some of them actually went to file tax returns and found out their returns were already filed. So when you do that, you need to file a special form with the IRS, an affidavit of identity that says that, you know, you are really you and whoever did that is not me. And then they usually credit you back. The other thing is there's so many things you do. You need to involve your credit agencies. You got to involve anybody that you do business with, basically, that your ID was.
Every place you have a business account, credit card, whatever.
Everywhere.
Yeah,
it's a mess.
And you know, we all know people. I have had my identity stolen 3 times, but it was only on a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Other people I know personally have had, once they got their social security number and hacked into every single account they had, whether they had a credit card or not, and actually went to multiple places and ran up monster charges.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you get it all back, but the aggravation quotient might be 2 or 3 or 4 months. You know, it was an interesting thing. Here's an interesting story, Alan, that you probably know the answer to, and Vince. Some years ago, my wife's uncle came walking into my house carrying a bag under his arm, and he was crying, and he's in his 80s. And I said, what's wrong, Tom? And he says, my son stole everything I've got. This is all I've got left is what's under my arm, and I have no money. He took every dime I've got, and I'm eating at soup kitchens. So I said, holy mackerel. I said, well, come on in. We're going to feed you. You go in bed and thing, and I'll take care of your son. Now, the kid's an alcoholic, and he's not a kid. He's a full-grown man. But, what you know, addicts, quote, they're going to steal. They're going to do whatever they can to support their addiction. So I took him, and I dropped him off down in Palm Beach County, gave him $100, and I said, don't come back. Well, in the meantime, I come back, and Dad sleeps, spends the night. Next day, I said, what's this? He took all your money. He says, yeah, he's a junior, same name as me. So he forged my checks, and he took every dime out of my account, like $14,000. And I said, well, the bank's not allowed to give money to anybody except on your signature, even if it looks like yours. That's their liability. So I said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go down to the bank and just don't say anything, because he's one of these chatters. And once I got him talking, man, I'd never shut him up. I said, you just sit there and be quiet, and we're going to get you your money back. And if the bank closes, just tell them we're not leaving. And if they're going to call the police, that's good, because we'll get some publicity, and you never know what's going to happen. So we go into the bank, and wouldn't you know it, I've known the bank manager for 20 years. Happened to be somebody I knew. Took me less than 20 minutes to get all his money back.
You're very lucky, Jim.
Well, I was, because the bank has a responsibility not to accept checks written on your account without your signature. Somebody forges your signature, it's still not your signature. And because of the relationship I had with the person, we didn't go through more than normal aggravation to get it back. But the moral of the story was even better, because now the son was wanted on a felony charge.
Mm.
So he left Dad alone, split the state. So poor Dad got to get back to a normal life. You know, it's his son, and it was killing him. But the bottom line is, the addicts will steal. So I guess what I'm trying to tell people, when you hear of these different things that happen, if it isn't something you authorized, normally you can have these things reversed. And not everybody's going to be very cooperative about it, but very often people are. Just another one, Alan, and I know you've bumped into this in your career, and Vince, you probably have too. Some years ago, and I've done this maybe three times in the last 20 years, I go in to see a client of mine, and he brings out another statement from another competitor that I didn't know he had. Now, not everybody tells you the whole truth when you do business with them. You ever notice that?
Yes.
So he shows me this statement, and he said, I lost $50,000 on this. And I said, well, what did you get? And he shows it to me, and I said, you don't qualify for this. He said, what are you talking about? And I said, in order for you to invest in this particular type of security, you have to be what's called an accredited investor and have a net worth of at least $1 million or $250,000 worth of income per year, and you don't have either. And besides that, you're an old guy, and you don't have experience enough. So you don't fit any of the criteria for investing in this. So whoever did this to you committed a fraud, and they probably forged some paperwork, said certain things that were not true. And I said, I can probably get you your money back. He said, I can't believe that. And I said, yeah. So I got on the phone, and I called the brokerage firm, and I asked for a manager, and went through the story. And they said, that guy's no longer working for us. And I said, my client does not qualify for that investment. And they had paperwork on this same client, because he was a client. Within 15 minutes, they offered him back half of his money, and he could keep the stock, which he accepted. I mean, it was a quick thing, because no brokerage firm that's a legitimate brokerage firm, which anybody that says FINRA on the bottom or SIPC on the bottom, we are under the control of the SEC, and it's very, very strong constricting controls that these firms do not want to commit a fraud, don't want to be involved in a fraud, and any one of their representatives that does such a thing, the brokerage firm has liability.
Yeah, so they want to settle it.
They want to settle it, get rid of it. You know, they don't want a complaint to go to the SEC or to the FINRA, the regulatory agency. And once in a while, these things slip through past inspection, because the people that are, quote, inspecting in compliance, they really can't monitor every single transaction. Certain ones, they have more paperwork than others. But, you know, Alan, you and I, or Vince, we all know, Dave, if a person's a crook, they're a crook no matter what kind of credentials. They're going to find a way around things. But normally, the person, you, the client, if you are defrauded, it isn't necessarily we need to go to the police. We just need to go back to the powers that be and tell the truth and show that this was a wrong type of transaction.
Well, one of the ways to really protect against something like that happening to you is to take that 10 or 15 minutes every month when your financial statements come to you, either on the computer or in snail mail, and look at them line by line. Make sure everything is right. And if you don't think everything is right, question it.
Well, in this case, it was exactly what he bought. There was no question about it. There was no
fraud. It just wasn't suitable.
It just wasn't suitable. The word suitability did not fit him. He did not qualify for that investment. Certain investments are high risk, like penny stocks, right?
Right.
You want to buy a penny stock, which are small companies that are not part of usually the New York Stock Exchange or any one of them. They're traded over the counter. When you want to buy a penny stock, you have to sign an agreement that I never talked you into this. It wasn't my idea. That I recommended that you shouldn't do it. That I'm willing to donate my first three kids. I mean, it's
that's not a part of it.
No. But it's called understand your risk. Understand your risk when you do this, because when they licensed marijuana in the state of Florida and a bunch of other, a lot of people thinking, boy, this is going to be a big boom. People are going to make a fortune, and people were jumping on the bandwagon buying marijuana stocks. Now most of them are penny stocks. They got a federal rule against it, a state rule for it. I mean, this is high risk. Okay. That doesn't mean they won't work. No,
but as an example, one of the red flags is if you've been dealing with somebody and all of a sudden that person says to you, I'd like to buy a couple of stocks periodically for you that I think are going to go up and do very well. And you ask, well, what are they? What industry, you know, what do they do? Right? And he says, at the moment, I don't have one, but if you don't mind, I'll be putting a couple of things in your account over the next month or
Mistake.
So. And that starts the ball rolling, because then you lose control of your money and you give it to somebody who is absolutely doing it illegally, because they have no authority to put anything in your account without your yes.
Now, there are people, though, that do give authorities to their brokers.
That's different if you give authority.
And I know people that will and do it to me, but I won't take it. I mean, I will not take authority to blindly buy anything for anybody. And I tell people, I say, you're going to know what you're going to get. You're allowed to forget, but you're going to know what you're going to get. I am not going to do anything without your knowledge and permission. Because people forget.
They do. And I have that with my clients, some of them. Joe, give me their passwords to get into their business accounts so I can gather information to do their taxes. I said, no.
You don't have my password?
No. I don't want access to a client's funds or anything else. I want to avoid any kind of misunderstanding there. God forbid somebody should actually hack into their account and steal money. Then they're looking at you.
But they'll fill out forms for you or answer questions that you pose to them.
Of course.
That's how you gather your information.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I don't want access to any live, real-time information.
Yeah, what happens is too many people are extremely trusting, and that's a good thing. But on the other hand, you as a professional understand that accepting extra potential liability is not very smart. It's just too many chances for, you know, people forget. And the thing is, just easiest to say, I just don't do it.
Well, let's give you another example, Joe. If you wanted to do your P&A, you can do that now.
All right, 888-221-8990. Please give us a call if you have a question.
We have an official, 888. Now, you're supposed to write this number down next to the folks, next to the folks' phone, next to the phone, folks, and keep it handy, because this is a class, and we have tests. This is a sneaky radio station. 1-888-221-8990. 888-221-8990.
And? You know, I was going to say, the thing that I think most people should watch out for, and you can vouch for this, I had a client come in last week. And he gives me a 1099 interest statement. And it was a lot of money. I said, wow, you did pretty good on this investment. He says, yeah. He says, about 16% or something like that. said, wow, that is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, well, what's the story with this? Well, it has something to do with mortgages. And so I said, so, well, you know, how much you got invested? He told me it was most of his
too
investable
much.
Money. It's yeah. too much. And so I said, well, did you ever think about getting some of that out? He says, oh, yeah, I tried that.
Oh, yeah.
He said, and they changed the policy midway through the investments, then where they normally would have just refunded just like that. Now they said you got to wait until the expiration of the contract year. And I'm saying to myself, this is starting to sound like a Ponzi scheme.
Well,
it may not be. Maybe
no, let's talk about that. There are certain investments, and let me talk about them. Real estate investment trusts, REIT, right. Real estate investment trust. Now, the rules of a real estate investment trust basically say they have to pay out 90% of the profits every 3 months, period. Some are paying 10, 12, 14, 15%. Now, there's two different types, clearly two different types of these trusts. One is called a traded. One is called a not traded.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's the difference? To look at them on the surface, there's none. But the documentation simply says you buy it today, you cannot sell it tomorrow. If you want to sell it, you got to go find your own buyer.
Mm.
Some of them say, okay, fine, we will allow you to sell these once a year on a certain date back to us, not necessarily for what you paid for it, but for what is considered a book price, could be the issuing price. That's just one. Some of them say every 3 months you can get in line to sell it, and if we get around to you, I'm paraphrasing, it isn't exactly word for word, but the key is this. Personally, Joe Martek only does things that are traded. Only traded. Why? Because, as you were saying, Vince, people forget. And I have seen people put out of business that deserve to be put out of business because it was like an error of omission. They forgot to tell the client that it was not a traded instrument. Now, what's the incentive for the broker to do this non-traded instrument? Commission. They get a whole lot more money than for the traded instruments under normal circumstances. So is it necessarily a bad deal? No. Some very, very good companies have some very, very good programs in these non-traded instruments that are paying extremely well, but they may have a 5-year window or a 7-year window or a 10-year window, and they may have certain restrictions on how you can get out, and you need to know those up front. And every time I bump into somebody that has such an instrument, they don't know. They were not fully disclosed on the restrictions for getting out. So sometimes you're stuck just staying in. And I watched a couple of people, big names, lose their licenses, were put out of business because, gee, for some reason they forgot to tell people that these were not traded instruments. You know, Alan, and you and I have seen this for years, something starts off paying a 6% dividend, and it's dinking along real good, and all of a sudden they pay 5%, then they pay 4%, and you, the customer, starts to get upset because you were told it was going to pay 6%. You say, I want to sell it. Well, guess what? When they're starting to go backwards, nobody wants to buy it. So the odds of you being able to sell it are pretty slim. So a non-traded instrument worries me to no end, and I refuse to deal with non-traded instruments. And I have people calling on me all the time, good companies, solid companies, and I just said, I'm not going to do it.
Joe, and do they ever, I'm talking about the promoters of these products, yep. Do they ever put the actual investor's name as a mortgage holder or a lien holder on the properties, if it is a REIT or something like that?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, these are very legitimate instruments. The problem is they're not liquid.
Yeah,
you can't sell it. Or you can. I mean, I'll go to Alan and say, Alan, I'll give it to you for 50 cents on a dollar. It's paying 8%. You'd now make 16%. You got to hang on to it for 4 more years. Alan might say, let me look it up. And you'll say, yeah, it's a good deal. You know, and it might be for somebody that has that staying power. But for somebody that's looking for liquidity, for the ability to get in and out of it, it's not. And worse than that is if you don't understand what it is. Because here comes again. You have to sign paperwork that says you understand what you're doing.
Right. Oh, that little thing. We have responsibility.
We have. Can you imagine
that? As an investor?
As the broker has a responsibility. That's
so
why
do
some,
you.
That's why some guys lose their licenses. Now, to read some of these documents is tough. You know that. I mean, you've only got 70,000 pages in the tax code that you have to memorize.
I was a rep at one time too, Joe. I remember reading all that disclosure documents on these investments. And
oh, yeah.
Some of them, I could hardly make head or tail out of it. How could an investor make head or tail?
Well, they're written by attorneys, and Al would tell you, attorneys get paid by the word, and the more words they can put into this thing, the more they can confuse you.
And the more syllables, the more valuable.
Syllables, yeah. Four-syllable words are really good.
You what? Know, I have a principle that I would talk to about my clients, and the principle is called GIRLS, G-I-R-L-S. And what is GIRLS? It's growth, it's income, it's risk, it's liquidity, and safety. And the most important thing is knowing what your own goal, what your own risk is, what you all want with your money.
You know, when I sit with a new prospect, I'll look at him and I'll say, okay, what's our goal here? How much money are we talking about? I say, oh, we're talking $50,000. Okay, what do you want to do with that money? I want to save it for retirement. When are you going to retire? Next year. I say, well, okay, fine. I think you better put it in the bank. Unless if you want to spend it all at one time on this trip, I don't want it.
I need to put it in a money market account.
I just
right
instituted
now.
A travel ban to Vegas on that person.
Well, if everything is subject to, okay, fine, we can work together if we have a common goal. I got a young couple in today. They're contributing $500 every month to their account, and they're both working, and their kids are middle grown, and they've got their house. They pretty much have their act together. Now they're really trying to save money long term. But on the other hand, they don't want to put it in a retirement account, because now if a retirement account, if you cash it in, you have a 10% penalty plus the tax.
Right.
But if you put it in your own account and it's after-tax money, there's no tax on what you put in, just on the growth. So in case they want to buy another house or take a trip, they have liquidity. They have the ability to tap it and not worry too much about taxes. So goal makes a big difference what people want to accomplish. And very often, I'll have the same person with two different piles of money. One, long-term retirement. One, short-term.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, one, I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I want to have that money available in case something happens. And I also I ask people, how many children do you have? They say, I have six. And I said, you need more case money than a person with one. Because when you're at the top of the pecking order and the kids get in trouble, where are they going to go? So you have to have this, quote, in case money.
Right, in case money.
Yeah, in case money pretty much needs to stay in the bank, even though you're not going to make anything.
What was the
it.
Old rule of thumb, Joe? It was like 6 months of expenditures they were recommended. I was like, anybody keeps that kind of money.
No, there. But you know, I look at people when I have people come to me and say, Joe, I've got $5,000 and I want to invest it in something. And I said, well, okay, you have other money. No. That's all the money you've got is $5,000? Uh-huh. And you're living on Social Security and your pension, and all you've got is $5,000? Uh-huh. I hate to tell you, you need to keep it in the bank. I mean, it's just not enough money to tie up into any instrument and pay a commission or have a penalty phase to tie it up for a period of time. Now, if they insist, like I had one fellow, Alan, years ago, not such a young guy. He was old. Living by himself, widower. He said, Joe, I've got $2,000, and if I lose it all, I don't care. It's not going to do for me, but I've got this too, and I've got enough money coming in, I'm fine. And I said, well, what do you want to do with it? He said, I want to make some money with it. And I said, wait a minute. That's all you've got? And he goes, yeah, but I don't care. If I lose it, I lose it. I'm not concerned. I want you to do whatever you want. And I said, I can't do whatever I want. You have to understand what I'm doing. And I said, okay. This was when the recession... Before the recession, when the banks and everybody were going down the tubes and the automobile industry was going down the tubes. And at that time, the only automobile company that did not take government money was Ford Motor Company.
That's correct.
And Ford Motor Company shares got down to $1.80. And I said, look, here's what I call a high risk, but I don't personally think Ford's going to go out of business. I think Ford's going to survive. And I think you have a chance to take this money and really do okay with it. Now, you might lose it, and you got to sign a document that says you're willing to lose it. All of this has to be disclosed 100%. You know, you're not a young guy. You've been around the block. You've done this stuff before. Well, you know, Ford Motor Company got up to over $18 within no time at all. So he was one very happy camper. Now, that's one chance in a thousand that these things can happen. It was high risk, potential for high reward. No different than like a penny stock where you're taking high risk with a potential for high reward. And he eventually had to cash that in, you know, but hey, guess what?
Well, you know, depending on how much money he makes, Joe, the tax rates are very reasonable on capital gains.
Sure.
I mean, you're talking an average, you know, below $450,000 of total income, you're talking 15%. If you're in a 10% tax bracket, you might have no tax.
He was.
And so, you know, it's very, very beneficial to the investor.
He did extremely well. He was the happiest camper in the world. But the truth was, I bet you 20 times we made it crystal clear that you could lose all your money. You're taking a high risk, even though I thought and he thought and everybody thought and we were, and I was right. Believe me, I've been wrong when it comes to
this. Not you, Joe.
Oh, can you believe that?
But you see, I have something for Alan now. Alan, you sent one over to me. I'm sending one back to you now. Because you made a quote before, and a correct one, that the Fed raised rates today, 25 basis points. Can you explain to the listeners, what does that mean to the average Joe in the street, you know, in terms of their investments, in terms of their deposits, in terms of mortgages, and how does that filter down to the average person?
Well, basically raising rates that you'll hear on the news tonight, a quarter of a point, it basically is a big bank thing, that how the banks determine how much they're going to have to pay for getting money from the Federal Reserve. But as that happens, as the Federal Reserve rate goes up, it does increase over time the cost of borrowing for the individual person. In other words,
but it's not immediate.
If you've got, like, say, a 3.5% mortgage now, you're still going to have a 3.5% mortgage.
As long as it's fixed.
It's fixed.
Yeah, but what if you have a variable home equity loan or something?
But let's say that you go into a car dealership a week ago and you could finance a car for, say, 5%. Well, maybe 2-3 months down the road, you might go to that same dealership and say, now I'm ready to buy. Do I get that 5% interest rate? And they may say no. They may say it's 5.5%.
And that happens with home mortgages,
yes,
too. Same thing.
Anything. Sure. It's basically when rates come down, it's trickle down to the consumer. When rates go up, it's trickle up over time.
Yep.
And, of course, let's review that bond prices today are probably going down a little bit, because as rates go up, bonds go down in price, which means your yield is higher if you have
new ones.
If you have new ones, if you're buying from, say, the Treasury today,
right.
T-bills or T-notes, whatever.
But there's no direct correlation.
No, there
is. It's
indirect.
Opposed to, say gasoline, for example.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as the price of oil goes up, bingo, you see it at the station the next week.
Let me give you an analogy.
Stay with 1 minute and we'll stay there.
Okay.
Home mortgages, a couple months ago, were in the low threes. Today, they're in the mid fours.
Mm.
Fixed rate 30-year mortgages. So they've gone up more than 1% in the last 30 days or so, because as the economy improves, the anticipation of interest rates going up is one, and other institutions start charging more. And then the Treasury bill, 10-year notes, they usually are a gauge for what interest rates become for mortgages. And as those figures go up, which is not directly correlated to the increase of Feds, but it's indirect, meaning if everybody thinks the Fed's going to raise rates next month, all of a sudden the T-bills start to go up now. It seems to be a month or two in advance. Am I making any sense?
Right, but that's not guaranteed. Human
no guarantee,
beings could
right?
be wrong. The rates may not go
that's
up.
Right, that's right. And that has happened.
Yes.
But that seems to be the norm as we look. And now here's the other side of the coin. If banks are paying more to the government to borrow money, they also pay more on savings accounts. Not necessarily.
Probably much less.
Not much.
But, yeah.
But let's take a call. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I have a question. I'm wondering whether it would be beneficial to pay off a home if you have it, and once it's gotten down low, or try to refinance the home.
Well, famous last words. See, there's a double-edged sword here. The rule is we got a head and we have a stomach. The head says, mortgage interest rates are pretty low. I like this. I might need to do this. I have a tax deduction because the interest rate is deductible. But the stomach says, I want that house paid for because that's the way life works. You should have it paid for, free and clear. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So now, beneficial. If you refinance your house, you're going to get some cash and put it in your pocket. Am I right?
No, I don't want to take any cash out. No.
You just want to pay off your house or refinance it at another interest rate, right?
Right. Lower, yes.
Uh-huh. What interest rate are you paying right now?
6.5.
You can probably get a 2% interest rate better than the one you are paying right now, which if you had a $100,000 mortgage, that's $2,000 a year you would save in interest. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely.
So, literally, if you gave your name and phone number to Pastor Tom, I'll pass this on to Mike Paulus, our mortgage guy. He will talk to you on the phone. He will run a credit check on the phone and will tell you exactly what you qualify for in 15 minutes.
Okay.
Then you'll know exactly what you can do. And if how much do you owe on your house now?
About 36.
And how much is your house worth, would you guess?
The tax was only 50-something at the last time they sent out the tax.
That's your tax assessment. That's not necessarily.
No, that's a tax assessment. But in your neighborhood, do you know what houses are selling for that are like yours?
Yeah, probably about 75.
Okay, good. So what happens is you got a 50% loan to value, which you might be able to get an even lower interest rate. And even have a 15-year note, which would even get better than a 30-year note. And what Mike will do, he'll counsel you and show you the figures and see what fits into your budget and how that can work well for you. But that's you're in a really good position to refinance.
Okay. All right.
So I'm going to pass your name on to Mike Paulus. If you don't hear from him by Friday, you make sure you call back the radio station, and I'll jerk his chain to make sure he calls you.
All right, sounds good.
All right, thank you for calling.
Thank you, caller.
Because interest rates are still, you'd think 4.5 for a 30-year fixed or maybe...
Still historically low.
That's unbelievably low in comparison to where they were for years and years and years.
You know, I don't know.
1981, mortgages were what, 18%?
18%. Yeah, I remember those days. Yeah,
those are terrible times.
And I remember we all were dreaming about the World War, right after World War II, when the vets came back and they gave them 4.5% interest mortgages. And we said, wow.
Yeah, right. 4.5%. Right. Here we have another caller. We'll take it. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Yes, good evening and God bless.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question. My name is Millie, first of all. I have a question regarding buying a house. First off, I'm not even a year married. And my husband and I, we want to buy a house.
Okay.
But he had a short sale a little over a year ago on his property, and I had a short sale this past October on my property. How long do we have to wait in order to buy a new home?
Good question, and I don't know the direct answer because the rules change almost every week. But I'm going to have Mike Paulus call you tomorrow. Same thing. You ask him that question. It might be as short as 1 year now. And I'm not saying it is, but it might be because they are changing the rules constantly, making it easier for people that did a short sale, because a short sale is a better mark on you than a foreclosure. Short sale meant you tried to do work with the bank and you tried to get somebody in, you took care of your property and you worked with them. And you just got caught in a bad situation. So the lenders are looking at short sales not quite as bad as they did. So you might be able to, but I will have Mike give you a call tomorrow and you ask him directly and he'll run your credit and stuff and he'll tell you the truth real quick. You'll know in 15 minutes.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Millie. Good luck.
Yep. God bless.
Yeah, I mean, that's things are changing.
Things are changing. I had heard as recent as a year or two ago where it was 2 or 3 years you had to wait.
That's what I heard, too. But it's changing.
It's changing. You're right.
We got another caller. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Joe, how you doing? It's Will.
Hey, Will, how you doing?
I'm doing great. And thanks to you, and it's my reasoning for calling, is because your advice led me to salvaging my house.
Well, hey, congratulations. I'm really happy for you.
That's right. And it just amazes me that nobody could find that paper. And if I didn't do what you told me and go down there and search it out myself, even though I had to go to three different buildings, I found someone that was willing to help. And within minutes, they pulled the paper up that nobody else could find.
I know.
And
yeah.
Yeah, and I guess from what you're saying, nobody would take the time to search. And that's ironic because I paid them at the closing good money.
I know. But you know what happens is, Will, it's called, I've got a job and I go to work every day and the bell rings at 5 o'clock and I walk out the door and whatever I didn't do is tomorrow. And some things, what they say, some things never even get put in the hat because the hard ones, nobody wants to work on the hard ones. And yours took a little more effort to get cured, but hey, you know what it is? God willing, you and I worked together on the phone, and I got you pointed in the right direction, and you made it happen.
That's right.
And you know what it is right now? If you ever bumped into another person with this problem, you could help them in 5 minutes.
Yes.
But you know how long took you to learn your situation? In fact, how much time do we have left here, Dave?
6 minutes.
Yeah. Take 2 minutes,
yeah.
Will, and walk through how it started and how you and I talked and how many times we talked and how you accomplished what you went. Walk through it and help educate some people on the radio.
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead. Start the story.
Right now, yeah. Hold on a second.
Are you in your car?
Okay, yes. Yeah, so I had a closing that probably didn't require a mortgage. There hadn't been a mortgage on a house in 15 years prior, the prior owner. Except he had a $25,000 equity line that he satisfied. He paid it off, but for some reason the bank didn't go ahead and file the papers, you know.
Right.
And come time he went to sell it, you know, it was fine. The closing company, the title company, it showed up, but they couldn't trail it back to the original bank during all the swap and buying out of the banks and the 207 and 8 and all that. The paperwork got lost. And without that proof, the title insurance company didn't want to insure the house, even though it wasn't that much of an amount. So they made a pull. Long story short, I guess, if I didn't get out there and do some legwork myself, like Tom Martek advised me to do, I was about ready to nullify my contract. The homeowner had, I think, somebody to buy it for more money, which would have been fine with him. And you helped me salvage my house.
And you got to
and
buy
I
the
had
house?
A lot of,
yeah.
Yeah, within 5 days from that piece of paper that I brought to my attorney, which she sent to the title company, we had a closing and closed on the house.
There you go. See, bottom line was, 98% or 99% of the people would never know in a million years to do what I advised you to do. And it didn't, it probably took you 2 or 3 hours total to accomplish what you'd been trying to accomplish with other, quote, professionals for a period of time to no avail. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, hey, congratulations. Yeah. I'm glad I could help.
Thank you very much.
And that's
absolutely
my pleasure. And Will, thanks for calling.
Well, I owe you lunch, and man, I gotta meet you someday, and we'll talk about some other things.
All right, we'll put it on the calendar. You call my office or call me, and we'll put it on. In fact, you're not driving your car, are you?
I am.
Then I'm not going to give you my phone number over the phone. You call back, they'll give it to you on the radio station, and you can.
Sounds good. We'll
put it on the calendar. Well, hey, congratulations again.
Well, thanks for what you guys do, man. I appreciate it. I'm sure a lot of other people do, too.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Bye.
Yes, sir.
You know, the
That's
interesting
a nice story.
Thing, he had this house and he wanted to buy it, had a contract, attorney drafted the contract, everything was good. Then the seller started to back out and I said, do you really want to buy it? And he goes, yeah. And I said, well, okay, fine. If you have a contract, literally in Florida, even verbal contracts are enforceable. And Florida has certain rules and it was drafted by an attorney. I'm assuming it was a valid contract. The fact that there was a home equity line, which is like a second mortgage on it, that wasn't released, and the title company they're not going to go out of their way to go chase down to the courthouse to find out its paperwork. You know, they're looking up online, and they're not really going to go do. So I just said, you got to go to the courthouse and start talking to people and find out and do things and find out if it truly was released. And it was. And he got a
copy. Why wasn't it recorded?
It was recorded.
Well, why couldn't they find it?
Well, because they weren't searching hard enough. Can you imagine that?
Serious?
Yeah.
Aren't these things tagged to a particular parcel number or ID?
Well, they are.
Something?
But I hate to tell you this, Vince. Sometimes there is a slip between the gum and the lip.
Was a typo, you're saying?
Perhaps. Could have been a typo. He finally had a person there that spent 10 minutes, and they found. Hmm. They found it and found the release.
Interesting.
And it had probably never been recorded. It just was one of those slips that happens in life.
Oh, so it's a case of not a typo, but this is where they just didn't enter the thing in the system.
He found it. And then we got
it. So the paperwork was there, though?
Yeah, it was there.
Okay.
Everything was represented as is. Well, the seller now was stuck having to sell him in that house at the price agreed to.
Well, the seller thought he had an out.
Of course he did.
And he didn't.
He didn't. So he got to buy his house. And I'm glad I pointed him and helped him. As I said, he had been talking and to no avail, people just placating him, you know, because they weren't going to make
it cheap.
You know, for a couple $100 for title insurance, they weren't going to go out of their way to really work on this guy. And he didn't have a realtor involved. He didn't have anybody. He was buying it straight from the seller.
Interesting.
1-888-221-8990, 888-221-8990. And by the way, anybody that wants to get information on different types of investments, even though when people are making 10, 12, 14, 15%, that sounds like it's too much, but something that's happening right now with these real estate trusts, real estate market, when it's going up, a lot of people are going to make some money. It's just real simple. When the market starts to go down, they can lose money. So how long is the market going to go up? Good question. But understand this.
Nobody knows.
Everything I do with people is based on liquidity, meaning we can buy it today and sell it tomorrow if we need to. So I am real, real liking instruments that are paying 10 to 15% dividend. You know, I listened to this guy in Shark Tank, and he says the only stocks he ever buys are paying a dividend. Companies that are making enough profit, they can pay a dividend. Yeah, the value of the companies can go up and down based on the stock, but the dividend is what makes him happy. So if you can get a 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, 14% dividend, hey, look, that adds up a little quicker than getting one or two.
So anybody, except in the real world, they can't keep doing that, Joe. You know.
Nothing lasts forever,
it's
period.
It's like saying, you know, I'm making 2%, but I'm paying you out 15%. I mean, it doesn't last
doesn't
for
work.
That long.
It doesn't work. So you have to understand the market and what's happening. Anyway. Anybody that needs information, you call the radio station. Even when we're not here, Pastor Tom or Dave will take your phone numbers, and we will call you back. 1-888-221-8990. And thanks to our extraordinary producer, who was very glib today, Pastor Dave.
and our attorney buddy,
Alan Love, and to Vince Rizzino, CPA. And this is Joe Martek, financial advisor, and we thank you very much for your calls and for listening, and God bless you, and thank you for allowing us to do this show. Until next week, bye.
God bless you.
You've been listening to the Team Martek program. The Team Martek program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF Martek. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team Martek program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team Martek is available at 772-678-7725.
G. Jesus, we live only for you, maker of all, author of truth. We've come to believe in all that you are. Our desire is to be